back on this road I've traveled. I see so many times he's carried me through. And if there's one thing that I've learned in this life, my Redeemer is faithful and true. My Redeemer is faithful and true. Everything he has said he will do. Every morning his mercies are new. My Redeemer is faithful and true. My heart rejoices when I read the promise. There is a place that I'm preparing for you. I know someday I'll see my Lord face to face, 'cause my Redeemer is faithful and true. My Redeemer is faithful and true. Everything he has said he will do. Every morning his mercies are new. My Redeemer is faithful and true. In every situation he has proved his love for me. When I lack the understanding, he gives more grace to me. My Redeemer is faithful and true. Everything he has said he will do. Every morning his mercies are new. My Redeemer is faithful and true. Jesus is faithful and true.
As you see, my title is Courage Prevails. Today I want to talk about a few different things, but the first one is the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Most of you are probably quite familiar with the story, but anyway, here it is. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had what he thought was a great idea, to make an image of man out of gold. Then he would make everyone bow down to his magnificent image, and if they didn't, well, pshaw with them. He had a fiery furnace just waiting. No mercy whatsoever. Now, you might be wondering, why was this image only gold? Wouldn't it be cheaper to make it out of a mix of, like, gold and bronze and silver? Well, as I'm sure you all know, early in Nebuchadnezzar's reign, he had a strange dream, which included a different statue, one that was not pure gold, but rather a mix. First, the head was of gold, then came the chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, legs of iron, and last, its feet, partly of iron and partly of clay. The dream was interpreted that the head of gold was Babylon, then the chest of silver was Medo-Persia, the belly and thighs of bronze Greece, legs of iron Rome, and the feet represented Europe. So it meant that one day the Medes would take over Babylon, and after that Greece, and so on. Now, as you might imagine, Nebuchadnezzar wasn't very happy at this. I mean, who would be? You just got told that someone sometime was going to take over your kingdom. Later, as Ellen White writes about it, she mentions that one of the reasons that the image was pure gold was because Nebuchadnezzar wanted it to look like his kingdom would never end. So Nebuchadnezzar called everyone to come worship his image. Once he had everyone there, he gave the instructions. They were plain and simple. When the trumpet sounded, everyone bowed down to the image, or else. Nebuchadnezzar gives the signal, the trumpets sound, and everyone bows down. That is, except for three courageous young men by the name of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They stood tall and unwavering. Some people nearby them saw them and reported them to the king. The king was very mad. Who had dared disobey him? He called them up and asked them, "Is it true that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image I have set up?" Then he goes on to say, "If you do what I say, good, but if you do not, then you will be cast immediately into the fiery furnace." He goes on to challenge the god by saying, "And who is the god that will deliver you from my hands?" He was technically saying that he was the most powerful one. No one could save them from his hands. So he saw. Courageously, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered him, saying, "O king, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is what happens, our God we serve is able to save us from the fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand. But if that is not what happens, O king, let it be known to you that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the image of gold you have set up." Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury. Who had dared talk to him that way? He was the one and only king of Babylon. He would show them who had the power. He would show everyone what happened to the person who disobeys the king. "Heat the furnace 7 times hotter," he barked out the command. His men rushed to obey. Strong men came and bound Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in tight ropes and marched them right into the flames. The flames were so hot that the men who threw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fire died. As Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego walked into the flames, I'm sure they were praying. I mean, who wouldn't be? But although the fire was so hot, burned up the men who got close to it. The only thing that burned on Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was the ropes that bound them. Sitting on his throne, the king chanced to look to see what had become of the man he deeply despised. All of a sudden, his face registered astonishment and awe, for although he had cast 3 men into the fire, there were 4 men walking around unscorched. To make sure he didn't have dementia, he inquired of his men, "Did we not cast 3 men into the fire?" And they answered him, "Yes, king." "Look," he said to them, "I see 4 men walking in the fire. They are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." Then Nebuchadnezzar called out to them and said, "Come out, you servants of the living God." They came out, and even the hairs on their heads were not singed, for the fire had no power on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar blessed the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In the end, Nebuchadnezzar was the one who got shown who had the power, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's courage prevailed because they trusted God. Now, there's one other person I want to talk about. Have you ever heard of Louise de Cligny? Well, Louise was born in 1555, when people who believed in the reformist faith were constantly in danger. She grew up in a Huguenot home, and her father was the Admiral of France. He was the leader of the Huguenot forces. Louise was in the middle of taking a bite when she chanced to look up. As she did, her smile rapidly fled. There in the doorway stood a man. Although Louise didn't know this man, his eyes looked extremely familiar. "William," she asked her husband, "who is that?" William, Prince of Orange, Louise's husband, answered, saying, "That is Francois. He is here for a passport. He is one of the most trustworthy servants." He nods to Francois and gets up to go talk to him. Louise's mind drifts off as she remembers a different time that those eyes made her think of. It was a cool morning, and Louise was sitting in the palace of Princess Margaret when all of a sudden her husband Charles comes. When Louise sees his face, she drops what she's been doing and rushes to him. "What is it?" she asks. "Louise, your father has been shot." Louise's knees buckle under her, and Charles grabs her so she won't fall. "Louise, he's not dead." "He's not?" Louise gasps. "No, thank God the assassin's aim was poor." "They'll come back," Louise cries. "We have to leave." "No, Louise, we can't leave. It would be foolish," Charles tells her. He takes her to see her father, and she rushes to his side, sobbing. "We have to leave, Papa. They'll not miss twice." "We can't leave now, Louise," he gently tells her. "There's much to be done." "They will not stop until you're dead, Papa," Louise tells him. "Then I will have given my life for the cause of Christ, and I cannot ask for a better ending than that." Louise knows that her Papa can't and won't run away from all he's done. "Then I'll ask God to give me strength and courage," Louise says, because she knows there's nothing else to say. Louise's courage prevailed because she trusted God. Later, Louise asks Charles if he knew who the assassin was. Although no one knew for sure, they had a little suspicion that it was Henry, Duke of Guise. Earlier, a Huguenot had assassinated Henry's father. When he was captured, he said that Louise's father had been involved. Although it was not true, Henry believed it and had been mad at him for a long time. 2 days after Louise's dad was shot, She and her husband wake up to church bells ringing and screaming. Charles flung the blankets off and ran to the window. All of a sudden, they hear a crack. "What's that?" asked Louise, although she already knew. "A gunshot," he grimly answered her. "What are they doing?" she asks. "They have come for us. Listen, Louise. They have come for your father, and if they can get him, they'll kill all of us. None of us are safe here. I'm going to your father's side, and I want you to lock the door behind me. Then get dressed. I want you to go through the back door to the river, cross it, and on the other side is a group of Huguenot troops. Go to them and tell them who you are. Have them give you a horse and an escort, and ride as fast as you can to Chatillon. Then you and your brothers and stepmom leave France." "No," Louise protested. "I can't leave you guys." "You must, Louise. Once they've taken your father, they will come for you and your brothers. You must warn them. You have to make sure they're safe. After you find them, cross the border to Switzerland and then go to Basel. There your cousin will give you refuge. I need you to be brave. You're the wife of a soldier, the daughter of a commander. But more than that, you're a Huguenot. With our last breath, we fight for freedom. We must wade through fire and blood. Remain faithful, and then we will accomplish what we need to." He presses a knife into her hand in case she might need it. With her heart breaking into a million pieces, she gets dressed, grabs her book of psalms, and slips out the back door. As she's walking, she sees a man just a few yards away from her, on horseback, directly in front of her father's quarters. His horse was prancing and rearing, but he held him still. Louise freezes so the man doesn't notice her. "Is it done?" he calls out. Immediately, Louise recognizes the voice of Henry, the Duke of Guise. "Yes, Your Grace," calls someone from inside the house. "Plenigly, blah, blah, whatever, is dead." Louise shoves her hand into her mouth to keep her from throwing up. She almost gives away and sinks to the ground to cry, but she doesn't and forces herself to keep moving. As she kept going, she saw other Huguenots that were also getting killed. They were going through the city, killing all the Huguenots. Clinging to God with everything that she had, she kept moving. Her courage prevailed because God was her refuge. She manages to make it through the city, to the river, across the river, and then to the Huguenot troops. She rides like a mad woman through the French countryside with only a single Huguenot soldier by her side. They ride through the night and at dawn stop at an inn. There they exchange horses and keep going. By the time they got to Chatillon, their horses were nearly rode to death. When Louise saw her brother, she fell into his arms and cried. Finally, she stopped and told them what happened. They took 2 days to prepare, and then they go to her cousin in Basel. Just before they leave, Louise receives news that Charles is dead. This left her heartbroken. Her cousin in Basel gives them refuge. A couple months later, Louise receives a letter telling her that she can come back and have her land if she'll only renounce her faith. But, as you can probably guess, she wrote back and told them that they could have her land and that she was not going to renounce her faith. Once again, her courage prevailed because she depended on God. Later, she meets William, Prince of Orange, and they get married. A gunshot brings her back to the present. She looks at where her husband went out the door, but sees nothing. As she runs out the door, where she had last seen him, she stops suddenly, for there on the floor is her husband, William. He is shot and is now dying. She looks up to see who had shot him. As she does, she immediately recognizes him as the man who had been there for his passport. William's guards had him now, but it was too late. The man was Balthazar Gerard, and he had heard of the bounty on William of Orange's head and had wanted it. Although this left Louise heartbroken, she continued to trust God. Her courage had saved her family and many others, I'm sure. But most of all, God walked with her through all the fiery trials, and in the end, it had resulted in her trusting him more. And he'll walk with you too, if you'll trust him and not deny him when things get hard. God is our refuge.